Bonjour, and a very big welcome to the Good Life France podcast. I'm Janine Marsh. I'm an author, travel writer, editor, and publisher, and I live in the middle of nowhere in a very rural part of the far north of France called the Seven Valleys in Pas-de-Calais. I've had a home here for almost 20 years, and for that entire time, I've been renovating it on and off. I'm nearly finished, but not quite. And along the way, I've acquired many animals. About 60 now, practically a zoo. For the last 10 years or so, I've been writing about France for my website, thegoodlifefrance.com, and also for my free magazine at magazine.thegoodlifefrance.com, which astonishingly has more than 1 million readers each month. I explore France year-round, the well-known places, the less well-known, the sometimes almost unheard of, and then I share those places with you. Next, I'm off to the Loire Valley. I'll see some of the great chateaux, Azay-le-Rideau and Villandry among them, but I also visit little-known Clisson and Saint-Nazaire. In this podcast, I'll be sharing everything you want to know about France and more with my podcast partner, Olivier Geoffrey.
Yes, and I'm not jealous at all of your life and lifestyle, Janine. I mean, why would I be? I'm French, to start with. I've been lucky enough to travel extensively in France since I can remember. I come from a nice region, Vendée, west of France, by the sea. Cool. I love French food and wine. And yes, there is that tiny little insignificant detail. I live in the UK, but still, I'm not jealous at all, Janine, just so you know.
You don't need to be jealous. It's very hard work, you know, for me. But this week is a topic which I am sure is dear to your heart. Where do the French go on holiday? And specifically, I mean summer holidays rather than winter and ski holidays. So I get asked this a lot. And you know me, I don't have any secrets. So today we're going to be talking about some of the French holiday hotspots and also about the French on holiday, some of their quirky habits and some frankly downright weird aspects of French life.
The Good Life France podcast. Everything you want to know about France and more with Janine Marsh and Olivier Geoffrey.
So first, we have to get this fact out there. France is the most popular tourist destination in the world.
Oh, thank you. Yes, and beyond, obviously. I can't say that I have proof of this. But you know, it must be true that if there are extraterrestrials out there, they are sure to be wanting to climb to the top of the Eiffel Tower, to visit the majestic palace of Versailles, and to feel the wind on their little green faces as they sail a boat around the coast of Brittany.
Absolutely. I mean, there is no way that extraterrestrials will be able to resist the charms of France. And we'll just leave that there, shall we? If any aliens are listening, please be aware that there is actually a law in France that forbids you to land your spaceship in Châteauneuf-du-Pape in Provence. And no, I am not kidding. There has been a ban on alien spaceship flying over or landing in Châteauneuf-du-Pape since 1954. And the law actually states any aircraft known as flying saucer or flying cigar, which should land on the territory of the community, will be immediately held in custody. Ollie, can you imagine if that actually happened?
Yes, I can, actually. I can picture perfectly Monsieur le Gendarme arriving at the site of a UFO landing and saying, "Bonjour, Monsieur or Madame Extraterrestrial." That is assuming he can make the difference between the two genders, obviously. "I must inform you that you are breaking the law. You must immediately move your flying saucer from our vineyards, or we will have no choice but to put you in prison. Not that we have one here in Châteauneuf-du-Pape, but yes, we will find somewhere to put you."
There's actually a vineyard in California that makes a wine called Cigar Volant, which is French for flying cigar, in honour of this extremely strange law, which was really about making Châteauneuf a bit more famous, a bit of a marketing ploy, which leads me nicely to a travel fact relevant to going on holiday in France. And it's another law. Did you know that in France, it's illegal to kiss someone when you're on the platform at a train station? I've got to be honest, I don't think anyone takes any notice of this. I certainly give my other half a big smackaroonie when I go off travelling and leave him alone with the animals. And no one has ever said anything, although I may not try if I go to Châteauneuf-du-Pape in case I end up in a jail cell with an alien.
Ooh, yeah, not good. Well, maybe you should be careful because, yes, indeed, it is the law in France that you cannot kiss farewell on train station platforms. SNCF, the French railways, got fed up with delays caused by smooching couples. So in 1910, the law was made to stop it. I don't know if anyone has ever been punished for this. As you are right, no one takes any notice anyway. We French love to kiss.
This is true. The French do love to kiss, but that's a whole other episode for another day. What is also a favourite thing of the French is to go on holiday in France. It's not just the 90 million, yep, 90 million visitors who arrive in France each year that love this place. The French do too. A whopping 80% of French people take holidays in France. And why not? There's so much to explore and discover. It's not just the Eiffel Tower in Paris and the blooming lavender fields in Provence. There's world-class art, magnificent architecture, more than 40,000 chateaus and fortresses, glorious beaches, snowy mountains, historic cities, picturesque villages. Oh, I'm dreaming now. The sheer diversity of the culture, landscapes and attractions of France is, well, no other word for it, staggering really, isn't it? And when you've ticked off all those must-see sites on your list, Versailles, Mont-Saint-Michel in Normandy, which is a dazzling little island that makes you feel like you've stepped back centuries, the Louvre, the world's most visited museum, sun-kissed French Riviera, the boulevards of Paris, the majestic castles of the Loire Valley. Well, once you've done all that, there's a million more thrilling sites and places to discover. Prehistoric caves, troglodyte villages, steep cobbled streets in Saint-Emilion in Bordeaux, medieval old town of Annecy in Savoie, Claude Monet's house and garden in Giverny, Normandy.
But where do the French go on holiday, you ask? Well, in fact, we do go to all these places as well, because even we French love to go to the Eiffel Tower and enjoy the views from the top, a glass of champagne in the bar, and we go to Versailles Palace, of course. Who can resist the bling-bling of Versailles? But we do have our favourites, and we like to travel mostly by car, or a bit by train as well.
And here's a fun fact for the drivers. There are a mind-boggling 30% of all the traffic roundabouts in the world, well, they're in France, 30%. They love a roundabout here. The very first one in the world was at the Place de l'Étoile, Star Square, now called Place Charles de Gaulle, which has the Arc de Triomphe in the middle of it, commissioned by Napoleon Bonaparte in 1806. There are a nightmarish 12 boulevards converging on that roundabout. And it's said that if you're involved in an accident, which wouldn't be surprising really with all those, you know, roads converging on it, if you are involved in an accident driving round that circle, insurance companies apparently split the cost 50-50 because yes, each driver has to be considered at fault. Apparently, this is the only place, well, I don't know if it's in the world, but certainly in the city, where an accident is not judged.
Yeah, it is absolutely true.
Wow. So anyway, back to Ollie. Where do the French go to in their cars and trains when they go on holiday?
Well, one of the most popular places in France for summer holidays is the French Riviera. No surprise there. Les vacances, holidays, whenever they're taken, are chance to leave behind the routine of daily grind, what we French refer to as métro boulot dodo, subway work sleep, métro boulot dodo. Whether it's a summer beach break or a winter ski break, French holidays involve getting up late, lingering around the lunch table for hours, soaking up fresh air, evenings spent relaxing, and the French Riviera is a great place to relax, and to eat, and to drink, and to swim, and tan as well, and nap. Voilà.
I love that. Ollie, could you just say Metro Boulot Dodo again? Because that was so fast, it didn't even sound like words.
So subway work sleep equals in French to Metro Boulot Dodo.
Now say it fast like you did before.
Metro Boulot Dodo.
That's amazing. I have to practice that. I'm never going to be as good as that. I know it. Anyway, yes, the French Riviera is lovely. And Provence is also really popular. You know, just as many French people head to Provence in the summer as overseas visitors. And I'm not really surprised because, you know, the lavender fields, hilltop villages, Aix-en-Provence, Roman ruins, festivals, wine tasting. I mean, you know, what's not to love? But the French also have their secret favourite places, which most visitors don't know about, like Le Touquet-Paris-Plage. Now, this little seaside town is in the far north of France, not the south this time. So it's about 2 hours from Paris by train. And in fact, it's just down the road from where I live. Its name pays homage to the affection that Parisians have for it because it's so close to Paris and it's lovely. And it's actually nicknamed the Monaco of the North. In the early 20th century, this was one of the first ever jet-setter resorts. The great British writer H.G. Wells eloped here in 1909. Noel Coward, Marlene Dietrich, Edith Piaf, Cecil Beaton, Ian Fleming, they all came on holiday here. In fact, Ian Fleming based his iconic Bond 007 story, Casino Royale, on Le Touquet's casino. Winston Churchill was a fan of the town, and Queen Elizabeth II holidayed here as a teenager, and she learnt to sand yacht on the beach in the 1930s, which was a sport that was actually begun by a local resident, one Louis Blériot, the first man to fly a plane across the English Channel. The famous Dolly sisters, who were vaudeville performers who captured the hearts of men around the world, strolled along the front here with their pet tortoises, set with a pair of 4-carat blue diamonds by Cartier, given to them by the millionaire Harry Selfridge of London Selfridge's fame. And Sean Connery signed his first James Bond contract in this town. Royal families, Maharajas, politicians, Hollywood stars, millionaires. In those days, if you were famous or rich, you stayed in Le Touquet, which was in its heyday throughout the 20s and 30s. And if you were disgustingly rich in the 1930s, you stayed at the Royal Picardy Hotel. It was at that time the biggest hotel in the world. It had 500 rooms, a whopping 120 lounges, and it also had 50 apartments that were so big, each one had its own swimming pool. It's astonishing, really. Some of the apartments had up to 10 rooms, so you had room for your maid and your butler. I mean, this was for the seriously rich. P.G. Wodehouse of Jeeves and Worcester fame rented a room there, and he wrote a book of short stories with Guy Plum. And one of them was the basis for the Hollywood film Anything Goes. And Cole Porter also stayed there and wrote the music for the film Anything Goes on the piano at that casino, which inspired Ian Fleming across the road. Incredible, isn't it, really?
Yes, and that's not all, Janine. The French singer Serge Gainsbourg got his first singing break here, singing at Flavio's restaurant, and it's still there.
That's just astonishing, isn't it? And yet most people have never heard of it. And the fact that Serge Gainsbourg got his big break there is incredible. I was going to try and persuade Ollie to sing Je T'aime with me, but I think... Maybe not.
I can sing La Javanaise if you want.
Yes, yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, she said yes. Okay. J'avoue, j'en ai bavé pas vous, mon amour. Avant d'avoir eu vent de vous, mon amour, ne vous déplaise en dansant la Javanaise.
Bravo, that's really good. I'm glad you did that, not me, because I would have messed up those words. Anyway, still quite swanky in Le Touquet, though it's a little bit more genteel than it was in the old days. And I did actually once see Brad Pitt and Angelina Jolie walking down the road. Alas, that amazing hotel is not there anymore. It was mostly destroyed during the Second World War. There were 86 rooms left out of more than 1,000 at the end of it, and it's now a hotel school, which is quite appropriate. Anyway, if you're looking for a seaside holiday with a difference, come to my neck of the woods. Le Touquet is lovely. But there are loads more seaside towns all around the Opal Coast, traditional fishing villages where fishermen sell fresh fish from their boats in their front gardens, gorgeous Belle Epoque villas. Mm-mm. Anyway, where next do the French go, Ollie?
I would say Deauville in Normandy is another of the in places to go, especially for Parisians. It's not far from Paris and it's very chic and trendy. A bit of a theme here. Do we French like chic and trendy? I think it must be the case. Anyway, Deauville is where Coco Chanel opened her first shop. It is very manicured and smart, and people dress up on holiday here. This is a place to see and be seen. But just down the road is Trouville, which is also lovely, but not quite so chichi. And Honfleur is also close by with its beautiful little port and traditional fishermen's houses. And the winding little streets of art galleries, the Impressionists loved it here. And another secret place that the French love, the island of Corsica, where Napoleon Bonaparte was born. 80% of Corsica's visitors are from the French mainland. We know a good thing when we see it. It's really, really beautiful, Corsica.
You do know a good thing when you see it, and so do I. I love Corsica. I went for the first time last year on a cruise around the island with Quasi Europe, the French cruise people. And from Nice, we went all around, stopping at historic cities, visiting gorgeous villages and exquisite beaches. And yeah, you're right. It is just magical.
Mon Dieu, my God, we are sharing all the secrets of the places the French like to keep for themselves, Janine. But I don't think anyone will mind. So let's carry on. We French love island hopping as well. France has about 1,300 islands, but less than 30 are permanently inhabited. And most are great for day trips, but don't have a lot of accommodation. However, the Chichi Île de Ré, just off the coast of La Rochelle, is one of our most favorites, but it can get very, very busy in the summer. If you like it quieter, next door, Île d'Aix is also very lovely. No cars there and not so busy. Less restaurants and places to stay. But if you love Caribbean, still silky beaches and hollyhocks growing wild, you will love it, and fabulous seafood too.
I like how you say hollyhocks. Sounds like a flower for you, Ollie. Hollyhocks.
Yeah, my accent, probably.
Very hard for the French to say the H, but it sounds great. Holidays for the French are all about food, I think. And I don't know about you, but sometimes the things I remember most when I'm traveling involve food. So when you luck out and stumble upon a vibrant little village square, maybe a table set around a shady plane tree, chairs that wobble on cobbles, lace curtain cafes and vintage looking bistros that proudly boast their plat du jour on a board, menus with local and traditional dishes, oh, tarte tatin, cassoulet, moule frites, salade niçoise. Oh, I could go on. Change with the season, according to what's available at the market. There's just something about it when you come to France and you see this amazing food scene. One of my most memorable foodie experiences was in Carcassonne, actually, in the south of France, you know, with the amazing citadel at the top. And I'd been to visit it, and I decided to walk to the lovely town at the bottom of the hill. It's called Bastide Saint-Louis. And just as I got to the down to the bottom of the hill, the heavens just opened. It was like it'd been a really, really hot day. And then this massive storm just rolled over. And it was a bit like taking a shower because the rain was warm. And I dived, not literally, of course, though it was raining a lot. But I dived under the awning of a little restaurant called Block G to wait out the rain. And I thought, you know, while I'm here, I might as well have a glass of wine. And I sat there watching people splashing by and I just got lost in the moment. And then suddenly it was time for dinner. So I thought I might as well just stay. And the owner came out and she started chatting to me and she made some recommendations. And oh, the home cooked food was just so wonderful. That was 7 years ago. And if I shut my eyes, I can still remember the sound of the rain falling and the smell and the taste of this tiny little shellfish called terrine, fried in olive oil, garlic and parsley. And I would go back there in a flash, I can tell you.
That's a great memory to listen to. I have so many memories as well, but if I think about recent holidays, it has to be the time I spent in Ardèche last year. It was great. We had a happy time there, definitely. And the town where we stayed actually called Joyeuse, which means happy in French. So that's a very good start to go on a holiday there. And then it's just the perfect mix of Frenchness, sunshine, beautiful landscapes, things to visit, and gastronomy, which is always very important. We went to that restaurant called La Maison de Nanny, Nanny's House, right in the center of Joyeuse. Magnific food. We also had a stroll in a very old medieval village called La Baume with outstanding character, and you can swim in its river surrounded by gorgeous gorges. It's all about being relaxed there, enjoying good food and wine, and being outside all the time. It's just what you need, especially when you live in the UK all year round like me. I strongly recommend Ardèche, really.
Absolutely amazing. Really amazing. But anyone, if you need holiday recommendations, Ollie and I have loads on the goodlifefrance.com website. So please hop on over and get some inspiration.
And finally, French people never, never, never check their work email when they're on holiday. Holidays are for switching off and relaxing.
That is so French. Actually, I think they passed a law saying that employers weren't allowed to make you look at your emails after hours and on holiday in France. I think it's a great law, not a weird one, that one, a great law.
There are a lot of laws in France, and then are they respected? That's another discussion.
Yeah, that could make an interesting podcast episode. We'll look into that one.
Yeah. Got a question about France? Well, ask the experts. We reply to you in each episode. And we do it for free. But now it's time for our listener question. So what do we have on the menu today, Janine?
Well, today's question is, again, to do with holidays. So this is from Samantha Taylor of Teddington Lock, England, UK. And she says, do people go topless on the beaches in France mm-hmm. still? So, Ollie, over to you. Do they or not?
I do. Okay, maybe that's not the question. But France used to be known for its topless bathing, and it is still practiced. but it's not as popular as it used to be. It's not illegal to sunbathe topless in France, like it is in some countries. There are many naturist beaches that are well signposted to stop people wandering along the sand and getting more of an eyeful that they bargain for. Cap d'Agde Naturist Village in the Languedoc is nicknamed Naked City, and it is the world's largest nudist resort. You may spot men wearing tiny swimming trunks at public swimming pools, and it's not because they want to show off their body, it's actually the law, another one, in France for men to wear budgie smugglers in public pools. It's about hygiene. Loose-fitting swimming trunks might allegedly pick up dust and dirt and be carried into the pool. I'll put a picture of me wearing one of those on the Good Life France Facebook page very soon, I promise. Or maybe I won't.
Oh, no. Maybe you won't, Ollie.
Okay.
Honestly, I think it's definitely time to change that law with those tiny trunks. But I did actually once stay at a naturist campsite by mistake. It was a long time ago, and I was kind of taking a road trip around France with a friend, and we just went where we felt like going. We did stop off at Honfleur and La Rochelle and Bordeaux and a place called Nontron, which was lovely. And we tried to stay away from well-known places and get off the beaten track. And every night we just pitched up at a campsite and we put our tent up. And one night we were really late finding somewhere to stay, and we were starting to think we'd have to sleep in the car. It was not a major problem, but we saw a sign for a campsite 15 kilometres away. So it was nearly midnight by then, and by the time we got there, we were really shattered. It was very dark, and the man on the desk was really friendly, took our money, gave us a map, told us where we could pitch up. So we did, put the tent up in the dark and went to sleep. It was August, very, very hot, and the morning sun woke me up. So I opened the flap of the tent and I just lay in there relaxing. And it was lovely, you know, the air smelled of pine trees and the cicadas, you know, those little cricket-like insects were making that weet, weet, weet noise. And I could hear the sea waves because we were on the edge of the coast. And then something flashed past the tent.
Yeah, people, ladies and gentlemen, you need to know something, because I know that story from Janine. And she actually went to that nudist camp by mistake with binoculars.
I did not. I was laying there, right? There was this like flash. Again, it was a pink flash, and I saw that it was a man cartwheeling in the nude. So ooh. I leapt out of my sleeping. Yeah, seriously. So I leapt out of my sleeping bag and I went to the door, and then sure enough, the whole place was filled with naked people. And then a man went past on his bike, naked, and all I was thinking was, oh God, I hope that's not a rental. Imagine if you got that after him. And then I couldn't help myself. And then there was a group of elderly ladies and gents that came by carrying tennis rackets in the nude, which gives a whole new meaning to the term ball boys. And then the whole place turned out to be a naked town, even the shops. That was a bit of a surprise, I can tell you.
Thanks so much, I think, for this question, Samantha. If you also have a question for us, feel free to send it to janine@thegoodlifefriends.com, janine@thegoodlifefriends.com, or via our podcast newsletter. This is the Good Life France podcast. Oh là là! Le podcast The Good Life France. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast. Please continue to share it with your friends and family. It makes a huge difference. So, we are Janine Marsh and myself, Olivier Geoffrey. You can find me at parischanson.fr. Details coming up in 30 seconds.
And you can find me at thegoodlifefrance.com, where you can subscribe to the podcast, my weekly newsletter about France, and my fabulous free magazine, which is at magazine.thegoodlifefrance.com. But for now, it's au revoir from me.
And goodbye from me.
Speak to you soon.
The Good Life France podcast. Available on all podcast platforms, on thegoodlifefrance.com and on parischanson.fr. The most beautiful French songs of the 40s, 50s and 60s, only on Paris Chanson. Available on your mobile, smart TV, computer and smart speaker 24/7. Visit parischanson.fr to find out more. That's parischanson.fr.